If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm literally Ellie Gibson.
You are, and I'm Helen Thorne. And who are these guys?
I know, right? We're having a foursome today, Helen,
ooh,
with Christian and Sarah Lee Donlan. Hello, Donlans.
Hello.
Hello.
They sound less excited than us to be here.
I think they sound scared, Ellie.
I know, well, you know, that's because we're frightening.
Okay, right? That's it.
That's fairly understandable. Now, I have known you, Donlans, for years now, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the listener and for Helen Thorne, tell us about your family.
Oh, gosh, this is surprisingly broad.
So who is in your family?
Who lives in your house?
Right.
Let's start with that. Let's start that at the base of the family tree.
Yes, so we have a daughter called Leon, who is four. I've been saying for years she's 4.5, and that's clearly not accurate.
She's almost five.
Almost five.
If you've been saying that for years, that's definitely
wrong. Yeah, no, that's bad.
It's definitely wrong.
Yeah, she's five, and soon we're going to have to start paying for her on the bus.
Yeah.
In fact, they've started asking already.
Oh, just strap some shoes to their knees and make them get...
I'm already doing that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just get a giant baby Bjorn.
That would do it.
So that's your family. Now, you've written a book, Christian, called The Unmapped Mind.
Yes.
What's that about?
Right, so shortly... it's very hard to describe it while making it sound any fun, so I'm not going to bother with that. So... our daughter was born at the end of 2013, and then 4 months afterwards, I started to have strange symptoms. So my fingers started tingling all the time, and what else happened to me? I became very clumsy.
Yeah, missing door handles.
Could reach for door handles and miss them, and all these sorts of things like that. And it turned out, eventually, spoiler, that I was developing. I developed multiple sclerosis, which is a neurological condition, which I should probably explain what it is very quickly.
What is it?
Yeah, because I think there's a bit I read where you say that you describe the scene where the doctor tells you you've got it, and he's like, do you know what that is?
And I was you're like, not really. Like,
no.
I think I knew that this is a spoiler for the West Wing, so our spoilers are all over. I knew the president in the West Wing had it, but having had it myself, I'm no longer entirely sure the West Wing is such a good a very accurate representation. Anyway.
Of anything, that's
of
what
anything.
I was saying. The president's not like that. It's an asshole.
So it is a condition in which the coating of the nerve cells in your brain and spinal cord, they have this fatty coating which protects them, and your immune system, rather than fighting off infection... Let me put it this way. Your immune system is not meant to be in your brain and spinal cord, but when it gets into your brain and spinal cord, it's never seen anything there because it's not meant to be there. Never seen any of this stuff before. And it's like, this is amazing. This must all be terrible. And so it starts attacking it. So what happened is my immune system started attacking the covering of the nerve cells. And what that means is the transmission. Nerve cells are basically just like, they move electricity from one place to another. I say basically like it's simple. It's incredibly complicated and frightening. But what happens when the covering is eaten away is that the electrical signals go missing, or they get slower, or they arrive at the wrong time. And the problem is everything in your body is kind of controlled by these nerves sending signals to say what to tell bits of your body what to do. And when that all starts going wrong, you're off on the adventure of a lifetime.
I mean, you know, you said it was no fun. I think, you know, wow.
I know, it made it sound like, yeah, no, pretty exciting.
So in terms of, like, you would go to open the door, and you were saying you, your hand wouldn't reach the door handle, or you couldn't quite.
Yeah. So what we worked out, what we've worked out over time, that this probably was, is that you have, along with all of your normal senses, like, you know, a sense of
humour.
Not that one. That one is complicated. But like, along with all your normal senses, you have this thing called proprioception, which is your body's sense of its awareness in space, and no one's. Most people are not aware that... I had no idea that this even existed. But it's just because it's when you close your eyes and you sort of know where your legs are. I think that's kind of what proprioception is. And for me, if I was reaching for a door handle and I wasn't looking at it, I would miss it by about an inch or a couple of centimetres. And I started to drop things. And I've had, like, clumsy friends my whole life. There's always been... I had a friend called Dangerous Davis once because he was so clumsy that he was just very unpredictable to be around. But it's quite odd, like, clumsiness tends to be sort of bestowed on you early on, and then that's your trait for the rest of your life. But I was suddenly becoming clumsy, which you're not really meant to do that. You're not meant to suddenly pick up a new anti-skill at this point in your life. So that was the sort of thing that's happening. And then one day I had double vision all of a sudden, and sort of the world was fragmented in these two images. I said to someone that it's a bit like having a tasting menu of neurological problems. Like, every little bit of you can go wrong in sort of weird and upsetting ways, and you get to sort of experience it for a little period, and then it goes away. With my form of it, it comes and then goes for the moment. I'm doing a really bad job.
No, it's really interesting.
Having a taste of food, we can understand, get on board with.
Absolutely.
No one really likes the tasting menu. That's the other thing we discover. Like, they're always like, the chef is really just like pissing me off with this tasting menu. It's like, well, imagine.
You've got like a lazy Susan. It's like, that's come around again. Oh, good.
Yes. Oh, the foam. Everyone likes to eat foam.
That's right. I don't want a palate cleanser.
Yes.
And so, some of the things I've read that you've described is like, you know, there's the motor stuff, but then the way you lost, and now I'm going to lose words to saying it, like, start that again, Helen. Because I've done the same thing.
I think you've got MS.
I think I do. That would explain so much. Not just being Australian, as I like to, but you were inventing words for things that you've forgotten.
Yeah.
Like windowsill and things like that.
Yeah, like you get like... So I had a big discussion with my neurologist recently about whether or not this was an aphasia, and it's not an aphasia.
What's an aphasia?
An aphasia is trouble with language. I'm about to mess this up even worse by getting the definition of aphasia wrong. But with MS, you have word-finding problems are quite common. But the problem is, a lot of the book is actually, you have a symptom, and you're trying to work out whether it's real or not, or whether I'm just getting to that stage in my life, or I'm just like a, you know, we had a daughter, our daughter was just born, we weren't really getting much sleep. And I was trying to work out, like, am I just, like, old? Is this just what's happening? It's like, suddenly I'm forgetting things and I can't open a door anymore. But then there were undeniably, like, so I don't think, no one's ever told me, oh, middle age is terrible because your hands tingle all the time. No one has ever said that to me. I have something called Lhermitte's sign, which is when you bend your head forward and you get this rush of electricity down your back. No one's ever said, like, oh, it's terrible when you hit 40 and just your back turns into a motorbike, you know, whenever you need it.
I've never heard that before.
There were moments where you're like, this is probably something else. But like the whole weird, one of the maddening things about MS is it requires, my nurse said this to me, it requires a degree of sort of examination. You have to think, it's not like breaking your ankle. You need to interpret what's going on. And along the way, you find out all of these crazy... I'm going on a rant now, but I'm going to stop. Along the way, you find out all of these crazy things that your brain does without telling you. So I woke up one night, and I felt that my eye was rolling down, my left or right eye was rolling down one side of my face. And it wasn't, obviously. I reached up and I was like, oh, thank God, it's still there. But for the next day, I felt like my vision was tilted. So I was tilting my eye to the other, my head to the other side to kind of rebalance my eyes. And I should point out at this point, I've never got a neurologist to say anything other than, like, you're fucking, like what the hell was that? Because I've never heard of it before. But what I realised at the time was that I had, there's my perception of the world, like what I'm seeing, but then I actually had a layer of perception about my perception, And I don't think I ever would have known that before. I had like this, there's this mediation layer between what you are seeing and what you think you are seeing. And that's the kind of area where, not to get too Oliver Sacks about things, but that's the kind of area where MS kind of gets in and just kind of waves.
Gets high,
yeah,
basically.
Really,
it just goes trippy.
All sorts of, like, I should point out, like, neurologists I've told that to have kind of inched away from me in a kind of like, can I talk to someone else now sort of way. But it's full of moments like that where you're just like, I don't understand what's happening. And also in the early days of MS, for me, there was still an element of this is actually kind of interesting, which is a terrible, terrible thing to say about your illness, particularly there are people all over the world who have this illness that's awful and they're not kind of going, oh, isn't this intriguing? This really mixes things up for me. But in the early days for me, I was like, God, this is really interesting. I didn't know any of this stuff could go wrong. But here it is.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So did you notice anything, Sarah Lee, before, or was it?
Not really. We did, once you'd been diagnosed, I was having a look through my photos on the iPad to see if I was looking for something completely separate, but I found a photo I'd taken of a page about like lymphoma or something like that, and I realised about 6 months previously you'd said, everything is in me is aching, like what could it be? So we'd definitely been looking.
But the problem is, I think, would you say that over the course of our relationship, every 3 or 4 months
yeah.
I've sort of announced like, oh, I'm definitely
yeah.
dying.
Yeah,
like,
it's the plague.
Yeah. Say the lights group, say goodbye. Anything you've got important to say, just say it.
Bit dramatic, yeah. And then you announced it that morning where you thought you were having a heart attack. That was the first.
Oh, the first time I was aware of it.
Yeah.
I had been out the night before with Keith Stewart, who was on this podcast. So
that
I'm not,
scumbag.
You know, yes. I don't want to say that a lot.
So he gave you MS. Is
I don't
want to
say
saying?
That like, my lawyers have been contacted.
Yes, good.
You can't catch it from kissing, Helen.
Ah, but
it's not just kissing. But that was the first symptom I was aware of when I woke up. My hands were tingling. And I instantly thought I was having a heart attack. Because everyone sort of vaguely knows what you're meant to look out for with a heart attack. But in my case, it was very vaguely known. So I was like, something like some kind of thing with your hands, maybe. And I turned to you and I said, I think I'm having a heart attack. And you said to me, it sounds... I should point out, Sarah's trained as a nurse. So it's not just... It's not just like you've become this sort of diagnostic genius just by having to put up with
me.
Oh,
no, I did.
Oh, yeah. But you said it doesn't sound like a heart attack. It sounds neurological. It's probably much more likely to be something like multiple cirrhosis or something. And then you went back to sleep.
So I'm a monster, basically.
No.
Or a witch.
I think that's one of those stories which is like, I must have been constantly worrying about things and presenting my latest findings to you. There's a famous neurologist I'm fond of called, fond is probably the wrong word, Jean-Martin Charcot, who's like the one of the most sort of important neurologists in the history of neurology. He was the person who described MS for the first time. He's writing in the 1860s and the 1870s. But he used to talk to his students. He said, beware, what is it, le malade, oh, I'm not going to do it in French. No, I am, because why not?
You wanker.
Le malade au petit papier. Is beware the person who comes to your office with a load of paper, basically. But like when people go to the doctor and they printed out a load of WebMD and they're like, I'm pretty sure I have botulism or something like that. But it's nice to know that was happening back in the 1860s.
So when it turned out he did have multiple sclerosis,
yeah.
How did you feel?
Did not feel good.
Oh, you've got MS! Shut up!
I mean, I was right. I mean,
yeah.
I'd always be right.
It always
yeah.
feels nice, but yeah.
yeah.
It was like scoring a basket from a really long distance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is your other skill, so that's
yeah.
And then what did you do next? Like, someone's just, you know, literally dropped a bombshell in your lives. Do they like give you a pamphlet and they go, off you go, or what happens next?
Well, it takes it a really long time to be historically MS has been a really hard illness to diagnose. Like, a lot of neurological illnesses are very tough to diagnose. We were very lucky. It took about 7 months, I think, from my first meeting to the final, you know, this is what it is. But over that time, you get used to the idea. They kind of, I've got a really amazing neurologist. I really love him. I think he knows how much I love him, and
yeah,
a little bit like...
Is it the flowers, the chocolate?
It's in all
the
of it.
Love
it's
letters.
More like, it's the violin outside.
Oh,
the,
so that
helps. But he was very good at kind of just guiding me towards that this is likely what it is. I really do think he worked it out incredibly quickly, but he can't. When you can't, Columbo can't arrest William Shatner in the first 5 minutes.
No, that's it. He's
got to take on a few dates and everything.
Yeah.
So it was like that. But I do think looking back, I think he worked it out really quickly.
He prepared us, I think, to the point where it's kind of better the devil we know. By the time you were actually diagnosed, we were like, okay, we were prepared for this. Like, thank God it wasn't something else that was worse, I think. So that really helped us.
Yeah.
That was our weird way of coping with it, I think, when you actually got diagnosed.
But like I was speaking to someone else who had MS recently, and I was saying, we were saying the weird thing people, I would never have known this if I hadn't been through this myself, is that the diagnosis day is actually positive. I mean, MS is not, it's like a life sentence rather than a death sentence is the thing people say about it. But like, there is just something about knowing that's a good day when you find out what it is, even if you're prepared for it by that point. You know, if someone pops out, you know, with a microphone in the middle of the street and tells you, guess what?
Yeah. Or of a birthday cake. Like that would have been more.
No, the birthday cake at least softens it. but there is something. It was a relief in our case just to know by that point, and then you feel like in our case there were things that people in our case. I'm sorry, I would bring. I would say
that. But that's the marriage bells. Yes,
yeah,
so the seven bells.
Yes.
You have to fake some of the symptoms just to make me feel better. Then. I should probably. Yeah. That's inappropriate. I'm sorry. So sorry, everyone. But
mate, you've got a mess to say what you like.
Oh, that's true. Actually, yeah. Okay, no, it was by that point it was a relief to know, and then you can start thinking about what to do about it.
Mm. So were you together when you found
out?
Yeah,
we went to the appointment together, didn't we?
Did.
When we got the actual diagnosis. It was the day that Leon learnt to walk, which was...
Yeah, she really picked up.
Yeah.
It's my day, Leon!
Stole that.
Come on!
So we remember
it's
day.
Children's Day! Oh,
I know! No, it was lovely. It was really lovely.
Yeah. It was a special day.
It was.
For you, obviously, that's a massive thing, and you're dealing with it. And I'm trying to imagine what it's like to also be the partner. Like, what? Because you can't kind of go, "Oh, it'll be all right," or "We'll get through this together." Or do you say that? I don't know.
I can't remember what I did. It's also the added element of having a bit of knowledge as well can be quite dangerous, because I work in that environment, and I know about, you know. I'm not an expert at all, but I do work in a medical environment and I do hear about different cases and different people with different diseases and stuff. So I think bringing that to it as well made it quite challenging for me. But I don't know, I can't really remember how I supported you in that time.
I think the worrying thing is I've been such a train wreck of a human being for so long that I think actually this sort of brought me a little bit into... focus a little bit.
Yeah.
I was in a weird way. I'm very, very anxious to make it clear that I'm not saying MS has really sorted things out for me and isn't it brilliant, because that's not the case at all. But I think in my case, I was worrying about so much that I suddenly had something very concrete to worry about. And I think that actually probably made me moderately less of a nightmare to.
Yeah.
Moderately less
of a
nightmare.
I would agree with that.
It was incredibly brilliant being able to talk to you about this stuff and to. I don't know, I always think people say it must be easier because your wife is a nurse, and it's more like, it's because you were the kind of person who was going to be a nurse anyway. Do you know what I mean? You had that sort of mentality, and it's just the sort of curiosity and insight and perception, but sort of a certain kind of kindness that went along with it.
Aww, thanks,
babe. No, I don't know, but you know, like, it was...
Anyway. I've got something in my eye.
It's incredible what you can deal with. Like, you look back and think, God, how did we deal with that? How did we go to that meeting and get like life changing news and then just go home to our daughter? But you do just cope.
Oh, but I think also it's not real for a while. It really, like,
yeah,
they say with any disease, they say that sort of the diagnosis, there's like a 5-year period where you're just getting used to it. And I've spoken to neurologists who have given diagnosis to other people, and they say the problem is the patients never really listen. They hear the word, they hear the words like, this is what it is, and then they completely drift off. I think that's pretty true in my case. I was thinking about Ferran Adrià, the head chef at El Bulli. That's what I was thinking about. But anyway, worse than the fog was the moments when I thought I had rumbled it all, and I was like, oh, I know what this is, you know, I understand this, and this is how I'm going to live from now, and I'm going to be, you know, this person, and we're going to live like this, and it's all, those are the moments, where you think you've understood it are the moments when you're really in trouble, I think. Mm-hmm. Is it like Einstein said that if you think you understand quantum physics, you definitely don't, and I think it's the same thing about this. You just like he also said some terrible things about the Chinese, and I was very disappointed. Did you
sort
hear
yourself out, Albert.
That's for another podcast.
Oh yeah, so he'll be on in a couple of weeks, and you can put it to him directly.
No. We're actually having him versus all the Chinese. It's going to be very good. Yes. Great bunch of lads.
That'll blow the lid off that guy. But yeah, I think there were the times I was really made life hard for the people around me, the times when I had this kind of magical idea of how I was going to live from there on, and that everything was going to work and I was doing really well. I was talking to friend of the show, I don't know, but Kez McDonald was talking.
She's a friend of the show.
Yeah, we haven't had her on yet, but you know, we'll work that out.
It was presumptuous to announce a friend of your show. I was like, you know, your friend. I was talking to her and she said it was clearly very important to me that I thought I was handling it all right. And I don't think I'm that sort of, like, I'm the middle of five children. I think my special skill is asking for help. In general, my whole life it's been like, can you fix this terrible situation I've made for myself? But at that point I must have actually just tried to be like, I really, part of me must have been like, I wanted to be doing okay at this, and of course I wasn't. It's being really terrible and awful and a nightmare.
But that's because you care about the other people around you. I think sometimes when we want to cope, we want to make sure the other people are okay. When you really love the other person, you're like going, oh, no, I'm coping fine, because you don't want to ask the other person. You want to bother the other person? Or did you just want to be?
I don't know. I don't think there was anything that magnanimous going. I think
No, you're pretty open. Struggle.
Yeah. I don't know. It's such a weird time. And like the thing which I couldn't deal with is you keep feeling... I heard someone say this the other day, that like, the problem with epiphanies is that you just keep having them. And so you have one, you think, oh my God, I totally understand this now, and I'm totally sorted, and I've come to terms with this. And then the next day you think, oh no, actually, what about this aspect of it? What about this? And there's so much to take in. And as well with MS, the other thing I should say is it's very variable. It's that you just don't know what's going to happen. If you have... I've now spent time with other people with MS, and we don't always have that much in common. And you can't really tell what's going to happen from one case to the next. There are people who definitely say you can tell, but I don't think... and none of the neurologists I've spoken to have really been like, oh, there's this trajectory that's marked out for everyone.
And I think when you did get diagnosed, I think that was something people around us were thinking, like, what are you thinking about the future? How are you going to make plans for the future? And what we realised is, we just don't know. But that was kind of great in a way, because nobody knows, and now at least we're aware that we definitely don't know what's going to happen, so what's the point worrying about it? But
yeah, I think like, yeah, sort of discovery of ignorance is actually kind of
really empowering.
Well, I said, but like equally, like the one thing, like writing this book, the one thing I definitely didn't want to do was write like either a wise book where it's like, I have discovered all of this stuff and here is my wisdom as like an ill person. But the other thing I didn't want to write one of those books where like my life was broken and then this illness came along and fixed everything, because that's just not the case, and it's terribly, you know, thoughtless to other people with MS as well who are just having an awful time. But like, so fundamentally it's a pain in the neck.
It sounds like bollocks.
Yeah, it's bollocks. Yeah, that's right.
And how does it affect? Because so I remember years ago, you and I had a conversation, which if you don't want repeats on this podcast, I will cut out.
I've got to try and remember this one.
But I think it was not long after I had my second baby, or maybe it was a couple of years old, and you were asking me about what it was like to have two.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it is, you know, blindly like, blah, 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 whinge, whinge, whinge. You know, it's more work. And you were kind of like... but how much work? And I kind of was like, oh, and then you sort of explained to me that, you know, in terms of thinking about your own family, that's something you had to think about, how much more work it would be for Sarah, and, you know, if she had to care for you and two children. I mean, was that... We don't have to talk about that.
No, I'm really happy to talk about this. Like, we have definitely discovered that once you have one child, the universe announces that it would really rather you had another one.
Yeah.
And like people stop us on a bus and go, when are you having the next one?
Yeah.
And it's almost like I'm not sure they're going to let us off if we're like, well, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We've only got one. She's amazing. She's more than enough. That either way, I've made that sound terrible. But we've got Leon. I don't think our oneness was anything really. In the end, I don't think it worked. It was much to do with MS. It's felt right.
There was a lot of reasons, but I think MS is probably at the bottom of those reasons.
Yeah, like, I think I would say like the middle.
I really, really, really like being asleep. Like that's kind of a big reason.
The children ruined that.
Yeah, they do. And we've got it, you know, at the moment. I want to touch wood with it. Like, at the moment, you know, we have quite a nice time of it, and I just couldn't cope with the.
Going back to that time.
Yeah.
MS or no MS, I mean,
yeah.
It's a lot.
Completely,
That's another thing, is like the question of how big a space a diagnosis like this should have in your life is really hard to answer. And like for the first 5 years, there were moments when I felt really normal all the time. I felt like, I shouldn't use that word, but I felt like my old self all the time. And yet this thing was still hovering over me. And I think now I feel much more symptomatic pretty much all the time, and yet it's retracted to a slightly smaller. Does that feel safe?
Yeah.
I remember telling you once, I don't think I've said MS all this week.
Yeah.
Obviously the week I was in a terrible coma. No, I should cut that joke out.
That's hilarious, keep it in.
Having a child is such a huge life-changing thing. To have this at the same time as you being diagnosed, it was really a question of like, where does one thing end and where does the other thing end?
Mm.
And what is me just being a nightmare in the middle of it anyway?
I mean, you're a man to begin with, which is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty terrible.
I'm sorry.
Bad enough when they're not even really ill.
Is that even the right word? Do you think of yourself as ill? I mean, it's not an illness by definition, is it? Or but it's.
It is an illness.
Chronic,
yeah. Yeah, it's an illness.
Oh, okay.
The record, Ellie Gibson was wrong.
One of the weird things I've discovered, and I wish I'd discovered this before I wrote a fucking book about it, but one of the weird things I've discovered, it's taken me a long time, is that you can be ill and illness isn't the only defining, it isn't the defining part of your personality. And I think I discovered that very late on, relatively speaking. I went to university with a friend who I write about in the book, and he had renal failure. He was on dialysis and all these things. He was amazing, a really, really close friend of mine. And looking back, I don't think I ever understood him properly, because I think as much as I loved him and I loved hanging out with him, and we didn't spend our time talking about renal failure and all this stuff, I think it was such a defining part of the way I thought about him, probably. It's an awful thing to admit, but it's the truth. I was 19 at the time, and I was an idiot. And when I look back now, I'm like, God, loads of the decisions he made in his life, he wasn't making them as an ill person. He was making them as a person. And I understand him a little bit better, and I feel I understand, you know, the things. There are definitely decisions I make as a person with an illness, but then a lot of the time I'm just the same awful, unbearable clown I was
before. Can you still get cross with him? That's what I want to know.
Yeah,
oh, Jesus Christ.
No,
definitely.
I'm still in charge.
Good.
everyone gets cross with me still, do you know what I mean? That's like, but no, I think, like, you know, I think people are very aware that sort of underneath this terrible thing that they all feel sorry for me about, I'm still a massive jerk.
Can you have that put on a t-shirt, please? Still a jerk.
Still a jerk.
Yeah. My massive jerk.
But because I think this is one of the things that people find difficult talking about, and I found that moving to this country, that, you know, when you told people that you had MS and things like that, did you find you were almost sympathising with them
feeling uncomfortable? Do you know what I mean? Like those situations?
I've never done it well. I've never ever told someone well. There must be a way to do it by...
In a Christmas cracker.
Out of a cake.
Fortune cookie.
Like all the cryptic crossword.
It's like the gender reveal. You could have like an illness reveal.
Wait, I've got it. Yeah. Morse code on a trumpet. You can have that.
Contact the MS Society right now.
That's the old advertising slogan. Yeah. Say it with Morse code on a trumpet.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never done it well. It's really hard, I think. In my defence, it's really hard to do, but also not in my defence. I think I've done it spectacularly badly. I remember telling someone early on, oh, I've got this thing, but it's probably nothing. And then they were like, oh, that's, you know, okay, that's what you said. But anyway, did you see this thing on television last night? And I was like, no, I said it was nothing, but it's not nothing.
Dude, my eyeball is rolling down my chin. Dude, I don't know the word for windowsill. Would you listen to me, please?
All of the important things have been taken from me, and the word for windowsill.
I don't want attention, but I really want a little bit of attention.
But then, you know, and then there's other times when, you overshoot too much the other way, and they're ready to kind of come to your funeral. Like, I think I told someone that that my body was eating my brain, which is a terrible thing to say, like,
especially to a child.
Especially in front of their
dad's
class.
Brain.
So we're going to hear from Leon's dad.
Never go to that soft play.
But yeah, my point being, but in the book, the best line in the book probably is my brother Paul, isn't it? He was not.
You've got to do his voice.
I can't do his voice. My brother Paul, I said to my friend about, he's lovely, but I don't talk to him that often. Partly because he lives in the same town, so why would you talk to someone who lives nearby? It'd be ridiculous. But I said, oh, I think I've got MS, and he said, I can't say I'm happy about it. And he, yeah, it was like I'd told a Mitchell brother that I'd like broken a window or something. Grant, you're not going to be happy about this.
Not the best news about today, sir. Not the best news. Oh, that's amazing. Now, are there things that people have said to you when you've told them that, like, basically, for anyone who's kind of knows someone who's going through this, what should you not say to someone with MS?
Oh, no. God, there probably are things, but I John Diamond, the writer, once said that he felt there were no right or wrong things to say. There were right or wrong people, which is like a sick burn in a way, I suppose. What I wish I'd realised when I was looking back over telling people and making a mess of telling people, I wish I'd realised that it's a moment for them as well as just for you. I think I went into it and I was like, well, I'm going to tell you this thing, but it's really about me and this awful thing that's happened to me. And, you know, I'm just going to tell you and then get on with my woeful misery. You know,
mic drop.
Like, yeah. But what I realised is actually you're telling something to them which is really going to upset them or make them secretly delighted. But, like,
they're not going to be happy about it.
But, like, I definitely been talking to my dad about it. And I thought my dad would immediately take control and sort of in a way sort of dad it all up into a nice pile and sort it out, and he didn't. He was really upset, and he you know, he gave me some not brilliant advice about things to watch out for. I should explain that because it makes it sound like he said, you know, you need to immediately go on a booze cruise. You must get on a ferry immediately. But he said that when he had been a social worker, he'd read a paper on MS personality, which is when you get MS and then you become an awful human being because of it.
Wow.
So he was like, oh, well, do watch out for that.
Like, now, before you clear
the cut, So I spoke to my stepmother about this recently, and because she's read the book, and she's like, I didn't recognise your dad as you've written in the book, because he was so upset about it. And I think she saw that side of him. She saw the bit where I'm really unhappy this is all happening. But I think I think that I was so completely conditioned by the sense that I wanted my dad to fix everything, because I'd forgotten I'm not sort of 10 anymore, I'm 40. And the days of your dad sweeping in and fixing everything, probably, you know, probably behind me at this stage.
You say that, my dad's our roadie. He drives us up on our props after the show, drives us a travelodge.
I'll tell him and see how he responds. I'll be like, look at this, see what he did.
Yeah, that's a pro. Talk about it, because how old is Leon now? So she's
almost 5. Yeah.
So how much does she know about what's going on?
She knows that Daddy has got something wrong with his brain. And we've been pretty honest, but not like, you know, graphic.
Not like my body's eating my brain.
I'm saving that one for her 18th birthday.
I think what we've tried to do is just normalise it. We're hoping that she grows up and it's never a moment where we sit down with her and say, this is what MS is and this is what Daddy has. It's more, we kind of just want it to be part of...
We've normalised it a little too well. Sometimes she says, oh, you can't remember anything, can you, Daddy?
That stings. Yeah.
But it's good, actually. She will never know me without it, really, I think.
But she's like, really considerate about it as well, which is really amazing. Chris picks her up from school twice a week, and you have to, at the moment, walk quite a long distance with her to get home. And she knows that, and she'll say, you know, I'll make sure that I'm walking fast for Daddy and not dragging along. You know, she is aware of it, and she's aware of times when you're struggling and stuff, which I'm really proud of.
And we were very lucky in that the one who arrived she's very kind anyway.
She knows she's in a book as well,
doesn't she? She does kind, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's got no pictures, so...
She must be good. She's named after an excellent food chain. I don't know why you didn't call her Nando's. I mean, fatal error. Just Leon.
She does love Leon, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
Everyone loves their own name.
I'm not so keen on one.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Going to an NCT group, you're lumped with people you may or may not like.
Let's be honest, like, you're almost certainly not.
You certainly like. I mean, have you gone to like support groups with MS and gone, right, all right, we're in this thing together, but I don't really like you.
I was really worried about when I first.
What I'm asking is, are there bastards out there? Are there MS bastards?
It's almost like you can be ill and still a wanker.
I know.
What a shocker.
This is the nutshell I want to.
I feel that is my truth almost.
Get a tap.
Yeah. I was very worried about that when I first. I put off meeting one of the good things about this country is the NHS, and it's been amazing in my case, really extraordinary. And I was given an MS. Contact. I have a nurse I can talk to about things. And I really put it off at first. And I think the reason why was I thought I was going to have to go to, there'd be like a church hall somewhere, and I'd have to meet all these other people who are in my situation. They wouldn't want to meet me, and I wouldn't want to meet them, and we'd just all sit together and make each other feel worse. And so for a long time, I was really frightened. And frightened is the right word. Like, this is what an idiot I am, but I was really frightened about meeting other people with MS, because I thought, like, you're just going to be you're just going to show me my future somewhere. I know that sounds very callous, but like, I'm you know, my callousness definitely rose to the top.
It's like when you've got a baby and you see people with kids who are older, like, I don't need to know my future.
Don't need to know.
No, I don't want to know about that.
It's like looking into a magic mirror.
Yeah.
Actually, I now know a number of people with MS, and it's been extraordinary, like, brilliant. Mm. And I wish I'd done it earlier.
But are there things that you know now, because now you're like a few years in, and there are things that you know now that you kind of wish you'd known at the beginning?
Yes, like I wish, you're not going to solve it quickly. Like, if you're looking for the analogy that makes sense of everything, it's not going to turn up.
Mm. Apart from the taster menu one, which I thought was...
Oh, the taster menu is quite good. Very but, like, gorgeous. That's the kind of thing where you say that to people, and if they have any neurological illness in their own family, they'll be like, I can't believe you just said that. Like, I can't believe you likened it to the fat duck, you know, Heston. fucking around with the chocolate twills in the middle of my illness, right? I feel like the mistakes never end. Let me put it that way. But, you know, the mistakes and the terrible realisation that you've been a terrible person, you've thought about these things in a terrible way for so long, that never goes away, really. You just kind of... There's always more terrible things that you realise that you've always thought. So,
sounds jolly.
Great.
Yeah. My God, oh, yeah.
It's all terrible, all the time.
No, but what I mean is, like, it confronts you with your own biases about it.
But what about your support, Sarah Lee? Like, in terms of, you know, you're going through a big thing as well. Is there partner support?
I don't think...
There should be.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. And I'm sure there's a lot of amazing people that that help their partners a lot who have MS. But at the moment, that hasn't been something that I've had to do. And I feel like my support is just us.
I don't know. I don't think that's true. Because the thing you really... Actually, you say that, like, the very thing you realise. The thing I really did realise over the course of all this is that actually I had it very good so far.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm in this country where my health care is taken care of by extremely smart people. I don't have to pay for it. And, like, this happened at a period where we just bought a house and we had our daughter, you know. And this whole network of support that I hadn't really thought about was there. You know, my dad.
Yeah, I mean, we've got amazing
your
family. Like, my mum and stepdad moved down to Brighton from Scarborough to come and help with childcare and stuff like that. So we do have an amazing family and friend network.
But you've got each other as well, and you do have one of the strongest bonds. I'm not just being nice. I'm never just nice. Because you got married. How long after you'd met?
Oh, 9 months. Well, Chris...
9 months, eh?
It wasn't, yeah. It was... We'd been going out... Well, we'd been seeing each other, whatever.
It was.
Romancing
each other for like a month.
Me outside the office on the 71st. For a menopause.
And it was a month, and Chris said... We were in Primark, and he said, what?
Was that in Primark?
We were in Primark.
This is the most beautiful story I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Oh. There's now a blue plaque outside.
Yeah.
And he said, what kind of engagement ring do you think you get?
Because here we are in Primark.
Because we're in Primark.
When you're thinking of high quality things.
Yeah. I can't believe that within a month we were already in Primark.
And classic. You knew within, because I remember I was at your wedding and your first dance was Only Fools Rush In.
Yeah.
Was it? God.
I mean, we'd known each other for a long time. We weren't like, we didn't like Tinder or something and then get engaged a month later.
Far too old for Tinder.
I never really wanted to get married. I wasn't. You didn't either, did you? But we got together and we just.
That makes me sound like a force. It makes sense.
No,
like a force.
Neither of us.
She didn't want to
neither
get married.
Neither of us really
she didn't
had.
Think
no.
She wanted to get married.
No,
she was a ring from Primark. She was like, wow.
Primark just does it.
Yeah.
If we don't get married,
it's got an adjustable back. It's wonderful.
Neither of us were really on that course in life, were we? And we got together and we were just like, why would we bother? Not you know, let's just do it. Let's get married.
But let's get out of Primark first.
Yeah.
But yeah, by today's standards, that's pretty hasty
that's
to get engaged after a month.
Yeah, but my parents met and were married 3 weeks later.
Wow.
I say.
They're not together, eh?
They're no longer together.
About that story this morning, they were 19 and your dad was travelling, is that right?
Yeah, my dad was a monk and he had a crisis of faith, and in the book I write that it's because someone had played him Sergeant Pepper. I've heard a couple of reasons from him for why he had a crisis of faith, but I have the most recent reason was that he went into the forest outside the monastery and took acid with a friend of his. It was 1968 or 69. They took acid, and he said all the trees became these geometrical, all these colours, and the trees became these geometrical shapes. I know trees are geometrical shapes anyway, but I think they became much more low-poly geometrical shapes. And there were all these monks swimming through the trees and leaning out of the branches and playing peekaboo with each other. And he said, I'm not meant to be here. I'm not meant to be surrounded by people who I have no emotional connection with. And so he went on a... He came down off acid.
And then he, 2 years later.
He went off around Europe on a backpacking trip. And he was hitchhiking in Kent. And my mum picked him up in her Hillman Avenger. Was it Hillman? It was either a Hillman Imp or a Hillman Avenger. And 3 weeks later, yeah, they were married.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
And they had five kids. I'm one of five.
I felt almost that we should have five ourselves, because I almost felt like I had to kind of keep the tradition going. But then I wake up some mornings and I'm like, imagine that there are five children in the house. Yeah. Like, what the fuck were they thinking? Like, my parents waking up and going, just got to get the five children ready for the day and then do everything else. And it's the 80s, so we've got to do it while being on a fucking Lolo ball or
whatever. Oh, God, yeah. Worrying about nuclear holocaust.
Oh, we still got that.
Oh, yeah. That's back. That's trending.
Yeah, Lolo balls
are
making
returns. So what's your elevator pitch? What would you say to someone, say, buy my book because...
Oh, God, I still haven't got an elevator pitch. I don't. What I would say is it's not really about MS. It's about diagnosis, and it's about diagnosis and having a child, and it's about these two relationships, which are relationships which you are constantly remaking. Like, every time, I still get this with Leon, when we wake up in the morning, you look at him, you go, you're so different to the way you were the day before. It feels like you can do all these different, like, some mornings they wake up and you're just like, oh my God, how did you learn to say these things? How did you learn to have these sorts of thoughts? And just as my relationship with my own illness was constantly changing, where I was changing the way I looked at it, it was with Leon every day, it was so different. And I felt that these two things happening at once was just so very interesting, and was sort of forcing me to grow up as a little bit. And so that's what I would say the book is about.
Well, you know, you were saying you struggled to end the book. I'm struggling to end this podcast.
I don't want either of them to leave.
But it does have to have an ending. And, you know, now that we've talked about this very serious chronic illness and how it's turned both your lives upside down, it's Scummy Mummy Confessions!
Yay! The struggle is real, Ellie.
The struggle is real. So this is your story of parenting failure. Have you got one for us this episode?
Yes, I do. So yesterday I was feeling like I had a small baby in my tummy that was kicking. So I kind of freaked out because I've never felt that feeling. Well, I haven't felt that feeling in a long time. And I got home and I made my husband go to the supermarket very late at night to do a pregnancy test, which I was sure...
To do one? I mean
to get one.
How is he?
I know. It's getting through.
And it turns out all that vomiting in the morning he was doing. Wow. Surprise.
Just a whinge bag. Turned out I was just windy. Just windy.
Did you do a massive one and then go, oh, that's...
But I just felt very full. Like my tummy had changed somewhat. I was like... The baby grew very quickly. I don't know. I have a coil, ladies and gentlemen, and Christian, who's now unwell more than he was before. I've got a coil in my vagina, and that's meant to stop the babies happening. And apparently, it's 99% safe. And I was like, there's that 1%. You must go to Sainsbury's at 10 o'clock at night. He was thrilled, listener. He really was.
On all the counts.
Yes. He did come back with some goat's cheese, which was great. So, you know,
it's a
silver lining.
You
say baby,
well,
I say chef.
So he was like, well, if she is pregnant, at least we'll have goat's cheese.
Or is it for me?
Is it the Australian that you celebrate the conception of a child with some goat's cheese?
Yes,
is that how
correct. That is our custom. Anyway, so yes, but I'm not pregnant, so just fat. So that's great. Anyone else?
Leon watches far too much kids YouTube, I'd say, is our...
Yeah, we don't really have a punchline for that.
No, I mean,
just a confession.
She does. I want to feel better about
it. Why does she watch it? Because my son, I caught him watching kids YouTube the other day, and it was like he was watching some other family.
But the thing is, she told us that she was watching this program about a guy called Umrub.
Yeah, she told us for ages. She kept saying, "Oh, Umrub is the dad." and there's a little girl called Sophia, and then we got a smart TV, and I put kids' YouTube on the smart TV
because we really are the worst people.
Because we haven't been watching.
Because you've got stuff to do. Yeah. I mean,
and it turns out his name is Rob, but he just says, "Hi, kids. It's Rob here."
Oh, Rob.
Yeah, Rob.
There we go. So your book, Christian, Unmapped Mind, the Unmapped Mind is the sequel, of course,
yes.
Where you take us on the unknown history of mime artists. And
thank God mimes are unmapped. I don't want to know where they are.
No, I do. It should be like for sex offenders. It should be unmapped. It's mime artists, so you cannot buy a house next to a mime artist.
We'll call it Ellie's List.
That's just going to drive them underground.
We really should apologise to any mime artists listening, but we're not fucking going to.
We won't hear from them.
They'll just do a sad face, just draw a tear on the sad face.
Don't write in with a blank sheet of paper. Oh dear. They never make it to the postbox for all that week. Oh.
They can't climb the stairs, you know that.
They've got that piano to move first.
Good.
As I say, light and shade. That's what it's all about.
Oh dear.
The Unmapped Mind is out now. You're always supposed to say the publisher, aren't you? But I never really know why, because nobody ever goes, "Oh, I only buy Random House books."
It's Penguin but Viking at the same time.
Oh.
Is that like a subset?
It is an imprint.
Okay.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Glad we got that.
It's got a lovely cover. It's hardback, and it's mainly blue. So mainly that's very blue. Nice. If you like a mainly blue book that's got lovely words in it, do buy the book.
Helen Thorne there, once again, literally judging a book by its cover.
In your face, Mariella Frostrop. I've got this sit nailed. All right, okay. So,
Sarah Lee Donnan, when are you going to write The Truth About Christian Donnan?
Wow, do you want to hear it?
There's quite a lot of it in that book, anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Did you write it, Sarah? Is that what you're saying? Yes. That you were the ghostwriter?
Well, I'm a woman, so.
Yeah, he's like Frederick Forsyth. It's like Keith Stewart all over again.
Yeah.
We all know the power behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Is that even the same?
Frederick Forsyth secretly writing all Keith Stewart's books. The power behind the wheel sounds like a Frederick Forsyth book. It's got that kind of potent and kind of like, you know.
It sounds like a Meatloaf album.
Or something that would a lot of dragons and elves in it. The power behind the wheel. The new Game of Thrones. It's like Game of Thrones with mime artists.
Oh, God.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. Do come and see our live comedy show.
Oh, we're up and down the country. We may even come to Scotland. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? But
please stop asking.
Yes.
Because honestly, it's a long way to fucking drive.
Okay, yes. So, but we do still love you. Please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Where can we find you on the internet?
Eurogamer.net, I should probably say, shouldn't I? That's a great word for.
Or your Twitter handle?
I do.
Twitter handle.
Is that a new thing? I run a Twitter for Chris. What's it called?
I don't know.
Donlan's words.
Donlan's words sounds like it's my Jerry's final thoughts.
It's like Radio 4. Donlan's words.
Search Christian Donlan on Twitter and you'll find it.
You'll find it's by me. Being annoyed about the latest shit I'm making about video games.
Oh, thank you so much, Christian and Sally.
Thank you so much.
Until next time.
Bye!
Bye! Oh, God. Everything just disappears from my mind. Anyway.
That does sound a lot like parenting as well. I'm not saying you're not sure. I'm just saying that sounds really fucking familiar. So
I forget my own name someday. So, you know, we've all got...
Oh, that's good.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.